This is Jeff Oswald at Concordia Seminary with another lectionary at lunch Bible study for you. Once again, we're looking at a passage from the book of Acts, but this time, since we're past the Easter celebration, we're not looking at Acts as the substitution for the Old Testament, but Acts as the second reading. For the day of Pentecost, and the reading, of course, is Acts chapter 2, verses 1 through 21. It's a fairly long passage, so I'd like to just work straight through it and then come back to a few comments and reflections at the end. We begin then right at chapter 2, and remember the second reading from the previous Sunday led right up to this. With the restoration of the number of the apostles to 12. Now we begin by looking at what happens to this gathering of the first followers of the risen Jesus. Kai en to simple rusthai tain hemeron tais pentecostes eison pantes hamu epita auta. So, simple rusthai is the present passive infinitive of simple ra'o. And here it talks about, it's a reference to time becoming full. It's sort of a poetic way of saying when the day of Pentecost had come. But it also connects with Luke's idea of the fulfillment of time and God's bringing about of his purpose. So in the fulfillment, that is, in the coming, now that's an infinitive, so then you have an accusative subject. So the day of Pentecost, the 50th day, when that had come, and this whole thing then is preliminary to the main verb, eison pantes, they were all. That is this group that have been described for us, but will be further described in the verses to come. They were all hamu, an adverb, simply means together. Epi ta auta, we saw this last time, as a use of a ta in the sense of the same, here simply assuming the word for place. So they were all together in the same place. Verse 2, kai egeneta afno ek tu uranu hekos hosper pheromenes no ace biaias. Pause there for a second. And it came to pass and it happened. Afno is an adverb that means suddenly. Suddenly there happened or there was. Ek tu uranu, from heaven, and ekos, a sound or a noise. Hosper, pheromenes pno eis, eios, a sound, hosper, just as or just like. And here, pheromenes is used in a little bit of an unusual sense. Pharaoh, you know, means to bring or carry. Here, in the passive, used to describe wind as rushing or wind being carried along rapidly. And especially with the bios, it gives you the sound, meaning of this strong rushing pna'e from pne'o, to blow or breathe, then is the wind. So putting it all together, it happened suddenly that there was, out of heaven, a sound just like a rushing wind. So it doesn't say there was a rushing wind, but they heard the sound just like that. Kai epleirosen holon ton oikon hu eison kathemenoi. It filled, that is the sound, epleirosen, aorist of pleirao. Notice the omicron contract there gives you that omega, still just an aorist indicative. And it filled all the house Who here functions not as a relative pronoun so much as an adverb of place. The house where they were katemenoi, sitting, gathered together and sitting down together. Verse 3, kai ophthezon autois. So ophthezon from horao, here in the passive form, but with really an active intransitive sense. There appeared to someone in the dative, and here it's autois, to them. So, and we haven't seen our subject yet, but they appeared to them, diamaridzomenai glossai. Diamaridzomenai from dia plus maridzo, maris, a part, so to divide into separate parts. Here in the middle participle, divided glossi, tongues. Here talking just about the shape, and we too can talk about a tongue of fire, a flame in the shape similar to a tongue. So that's our subject in the nominative plural there. So divided tongues appeared to them. Now, what were these tongues like? And here you have again Jose to describe them as if they were. It's really Jose plus A put together. So something like Piras. So these tongues that looked like fire. Kai ekathesen f hena hekiston auton. And here, kathidzo, in the sense of resting upon, literally sitting down on, that is coming to a stable position, f henna, upon each one, and then auton, the genitive there, of them. So this, instead of one big sort of light or fire, there was a divided portion, tongue, a small bit that looked like fire on each person there. Verse 4, kai eplace thezon pantes pneumatos hagiu. Eplace thezon from pimplemi, this is the aorist passive, third person plural, and they all, pantes, they all were filled. And then remember, with most verbs of filling, the genitive is the case used for the thing, for what you're filled with. So they all were filled with the Holy Spirit, kai erxanta, and they began, lalein from laleo, they began to speak heterais glossais, other, here glossa in the sense of language. Speaking in different languages, either meaning different from one another, or foreign languages in the sense of different from what they would normally speak. So they began to speak in languages other than their normal language. Kathos, here giving the degree or the extent to which this was happening. So just as, or to the degree that, the spirit edidu, in the imperfect, was giving or granting apathegesthai autois. Apathegesthai is the present middle infinitive from apathegomai, which means to speak out or to declare boldly. So as the Spirit was granting to them autois to speak boldly. So it wasn't so much a matter of their own will or even under their own control, but it was a Spirit-guided speaking in other languages. Okay. Now Luke sort of backs away for a second to give us the setting that we'll need to understand what happens following this appearance of these tongues like fire and the speaking in other languages. So we've already heard that it's Pentecost. Now Luke's going to describe the situation in Jerusalem at that time, that is, specifically in those days. So, eisan de, eis Jerusalem, katoi kuntes judaioi, Andres eulabes apa pontas ethnus ton hippa ton uranon. Okay, so there were in Jerusalem katoi kuntes, that is staying in Jerusalem, eudaioi, Jews or normally Judeans, but here Jews we would have to say because they're coming from all over. Jews, that is, Andres eulabes, God-fearing, devout men, apa pontas ethnus, from every ethnos here in the sense of nation, people group, of those hippa ton uranon, of those under heaven, that is, on earth or throughout the earth, so of every nation throughout the earth, and we'll see the list is rather complete. So if this is a sort of figurative hyperbole to show how many people were present, we'll see there's not a lot of exaggeration when the boundaries are compared with Luke's world. Okay, verse 6. Genomenes de tes phones tautes sin eothen ta plethos kai synecuthe. But when Genomenes, this voice came about, the voice happened, this voice, that this sound that he's been talking about, a sound like the wind, sin eothen ta plethos. The populace, this large crowd of people staying in Jerusalem at that time, sin eilthen, they came together, that is, they gathered together as a group. Sin ekuthe, and from sin keo, is to be amazed or surprised, but with some sense even of agitated, perhaps disturbed, excited. So not necessarily a purely sort of happy kind of amazement. Synkeo etymologically means to pour together, so you get things are sort of all mixed up, and that's the picture. And why? Not so much just because of the sound of the wind, but because hoti, because akuon, because they were hearing, heis hekastas, each one, te idia dialecto, each one in his own language, lalun tone, auton, that they were speaking. So each one of them, they were hearing them speaking, each one in the separate language. So 7, existon ta de, and they, another word for amazed here in the sense of sort of standing outside yourself, that is a mixture of sort of amazement and fear by something extraordinary, difficult to understand. So they were amazed, and ethalmadzon, they were wondering, both of those imperfects, saying, uch idu, sort of look, aren't these hapantes, all of them, all of those guys, hutoi, excuse me, all of these men, asin hoi laluntes, these ones who are speaking, are they not all galileoi? And remember, uk with a question expects a yes answer. So to catch the force of it, we would really translate, now look, these men who are speaking, they're all Galileans, aren't they? And verse 8, they continue with another question, showing just as much surprise, here with pos instead of idu. Kai pos, and how is it then that we, akuamen, that we hear each, that is, of us, we hear each one, te idia dialecto, in our own language, in he egenethemen, in which we were born. The idiom there seems a little awkward in English, but the meaning is certainly clear. The language that we've been speaking since birth, our, we would say our mother tongue, right? so the language in which we were born. And now here we get the list that none of the lectors like to be assigned. And I won't comment much on those. We'll just run through these. So Parthoi, these are Parthians from the southeast of the Caspian Sea. And it helps here if you have the map in your study Bible or the back of your Bible. So Parthoi, Chi Medoi, so Parthians and Medes. Medes were from the southwest of the Caspian Sea, so east and west here. Chi Elamitai, Chi Hoi Katoi Kuntes Tain Mesopotamian. So also Elamites, that's north of the Persian Gulf, and then the ones who Katoi Keo here dwelled, the residents, those who lived Tain Mesopotamian in the land between the rivers, who dwelled there. So Mesopotamia. So we have Judaion, again, Judeans, and it's surprising to see that appear in the list. And Fitzmyer especially says it seems strange that Judeans would be surprised to hear Galileans speaking to them in their own language. Because of that seemingly strange addition, although it's consistent in all the manuscripts, various readers have suggested that it be changed. The fathers, in fact, suggested places like Armenia or Syria or even India. But we'll let the text stand for now. So Judeans, Tekai Cappadocian, people from Cappadocia, in the sort of eastern interior area of Asia Minor, and Pontan Kai Tain Asian. And Pontus and Asia. So Pontus, again, Fitzmyer notes, was originally simply the name of the Black Sea, but then came to designate the region on the northeastern part of Asia Minor. And then Asia was, in Roman terms, the western province in Asia Minor. And the list continues then in verse 10, Phrygian, Tekai, Pamphylion. So Phrygians and Pamphylians. Aegypton, Kai Tamere, Tais Libyes, Tais Kata, Kyrenain. So Aegypton, Egypt, and the regions of Libya, Tais Kata, here Kata in the sense of around or surrounding Cyrene. Then we get so the regions of Libya surrounding Cyrene, Kai Hoi Epidemuntes Romaioi, and Epidemuntes here from Epidemeo means to reside in a place sort of temporarily, to stay while you're on the way to another destination, so a visitor or a stranger in town. So we'll translate it as even. Kai, that is even visitors who were Romans. Then 11, I think, sort of qualifies the group looking at it from another category and helps explain why Judaea was in there in the list, seemingly out of place. But you have Judaioi te kai proselytoi. So Jews and proselytes. The Eilutoi, some have suggested, comes from Eilthen, to come over to. So in that sense, converts, someone who's come over from, in biblical terms, polytheism to the worship of the true God. Jews and proselytes. Cretes kai Arabes. So people from Crete. Cretans and Arabs, and again, because our sense of ancient geography is probably a little challenged, It's helpful that Fitzmyer reminds us this expands the borders even further to the west with inhabitants from the island of Crete and to the east into the Syrian desert. So the list of nations that these people are gathered from expands and expands. So, Akuomen, la lunton auton, tais hemeteris glossais ta megalea tu theu. So, we have this long list. How is it that we each hear? And then this list of nations that where people come from or reside, we hear them speaking in hemateris is the possessive adjective, so it has all the endings like a regular adjective instead of just being genitive like the pronoun. But in our languages, ta megaleia, the mighty deeds then of God. So, again, they are what the apostles are speaking out boldly here is intelligible to the people, and the content is not random, but they're proclaiming the greatness, the great deeds that God has done. Verse 12 continues, now then, existanta de pantas, so repeating the idea that they were amazed and de aporun, they were greatly perplexed, saying allas pros allan, saying another to another, or we would say one to another, ti thele tuta enai. This is a difficult question. It seems to be very idiomatic. Thele here seems to be used in the sense of to maintain or hold an opinion rather than wish for something. It's a little bit of an extension of that desire, but it's kind of, what do you make this out to be? Now, you often see it translated in Bibles as, what does this mean? But it seems like that's almost saying too much. They simply can't figure out what's going on here, rather than they've got a picture and are trying to understand its significance. So, what do you wish this to be, sort of word for word? It's, if you can make sense of any of this at all, what's going on here? Then verse 13, heteroi. So they were all sort of sharing this confusion and saying to one another, but some, that is, others, Luke says, had apparently come up with an answer of their own. But others, diakluadzontes, from diakluadzo to scorn or laugh, to jeer. So they were jeering the proclamation of the apostles, elegon, and began to say in the imperfect of lego that glucus memistomenoi asin, saying that, here you have asin, the present of ami, with the perfect passive participle. So they are full or filled, and then again, you get the genitive to show the thing, something or person in this case is filled with, and that's glucus, a third declension noun, which in the nominative singular would just be glucose. This is the sweet new wine. So the kind of wine that would have been available presumably at that time of year. And remember, this was a celebration that they were at. Well, this explanation can't be allowed to stand. So Peter, stathes deha petros, Peter having stood up with tois hendeka. So interestingly, still with the 11, even though Matthias has been chosen, ep eiren tain phonein autu. So he, from ep iro in the aorist, he raised his voice, lifted up his voice, that is, over everything else that's being spoken, the questions of the crowd and the jeers of the hecklers, and op eth thegsata. There's our same verb again, apothegomai, in the aorist. He proclaimed to them, Bedag says, with urgency, with the need to correct this misunderstanding. Andres Judaioi. We saw this salutation at the beginning of an address also last time in chapter 1. And I shared then Barrett's comment that this is a very common way to address a group, and the Andres here almost loses its any particular content, and so you have Jews. Barrett gives the very strange example in a non-biblical Greek text of Andres Theoi. When someone's addressing the gods, he also begins with Andres. So the men aspect certainly is not stressed here. But so Jews, kai hoi katoi kuntes, or perhaps here it's the Judeans, that is local full-time residents, kai hoi katoi kuntes, Jerusalem pantes, and all of you who are staying in Jerusalem at this time. So his whole crowd, tuta humin gnostan esto. Esto here is the third person imperative, so let it be, and then with gnostan, let it be known to you in the dative, and then tuta really is the subject, let this be known to you. Kai, and enotisaste ta rematamu. Enotisthaste from enotidzo. Enotidzomai, in the middle, really means sort of put this in your own ear. But we can say give ear to, or perhaps more idiomatically, pay close attention to ta rematamu, my words, what I'm about to say. Okay. Ugar, for not, because this is important, because it's not hos humes hippa lambanita. It's not the case as you supposed. Hippa lambano here to sort of take up for yourself, that is in the sense of assume or be of the opinion that to suppose. So for it's not as you suppose that hutoi, these men, methuusen, methuo, from another Greek word, less common one for wine, methu, to drink to a point of intoxication. We also can make wine a verb in the sense of wining and dining. But here it's not the case, as you suppose, that these men are drunk. Estingar, for it's hora trite tes hemeras. It's the third hour of the day. And counting hours from sunrise, if we say sunrise is about 6 a.m., the third hour would be about 9 a.m. So it's only the third hour of the day. Ala tuta estin, but rather, the ala now, Peter has shown that their assumption is wrong, but he's not going to leave it at that point. Now he's going to give the correct answer. Rather, contrary to what you think, tuta estin, this is ta ero eremenon diatu prophetu Yoel. This is what was spoken from lego. This is the perfect passive. What has been spoken through the prophet Joel. And remember that the prophets are simply the instruments. It's really God who speaks. And then Peter quotes the passage, kai estai entais eskatais hemerais, lege hothaos, adding a few words to the text itself to give context, just the way we might identify a speaker at the beginning of a reading as well. And it will be in the last days, eschatais hemerais, lege hothaos, says God, ech cheo apa tu pneumatos mu epi pasan sarka. Ech cheo is the future, notice the circumflex accent on the omega there, of ech cheo, spelled the same but accented differently, to pour out, here with the spirit as the thing being poured out. The apa really takes the place of the partitive genitive, and it seems strange to think of pouring out from the spirit or part of the spirit, but I think it's the attempt to show that this is not the same as, for instance, pouring out one's life. That is, that the spirit is not somehow exhausted or used up or gone when God pours it out. So he pours out from my, I will pour out from my spirit upon all flesh, that is all humanity, all human beings. Kai prophe tususen, hoi huioi humon, kai hai thugateres humon. And they will prophesy. The verb comes first here. Who will? Then we have our nominative nouns. Your sons, your plural sons, that is you plural. Kai he thigateres, humon, again, you plural, the daughters of all of you. Thigateres actually is the sort of a cognate of our word for daughter, and you can sort of barely see how, as it migrated through various languages to English, the spelling changed, and we ended up with the unusual D, A-U-G-H kind of spelling. So, your sons and your daughters will prophesy. Kai hoi neaniskoi humon, horaces opsantai. And your neaniskoi, your young men here. So the first was sons and daughters, differentiating by sex. This one will be by age, youth. Horaces opsantai. They will see, horasis is a vision, here in a transcendent way, not vision in the normal sense of what's in front of you, but they will see visions. Kai hoi presbyteroi and humon, and your elders, the old ones among you, enupneois, enupneas theizontai. You can see here the in sleep, the hypnosis we get from the same kind of stem, but in hypnion is a dream, something that happens while you're sleeping, and the verb there is then to have dreams, so something like your old ones will have visions in their dreams. They will see things while they're dreaming. So this affects male and female. It affects young and old. Kaige. Here in the intensive force, even upon tus doulus mu, upon my male servants, my slaves, kai epi tas doulas mu, and upon my female slaves or handmaidens, bondwomen, but both identified as belonging to the Lord, and upon them in those days. Again, referring back to the beginning, in the last days, ech keo apa tu pneumatos mu, I will pour out from my spirit, kai prophetususen, and they will prophesy. Adding the slaves sort of gives the inclusiveness of all people. The free have presumed that sons and daughters and young and old are free until suddenly you have the contrast with slave, but if they're included, then all are included. So it really is pasan sarka. Verse 19, kai doso terata into urano ano. Here, doso is the future of didomi, which ordinarily means to give, and here it's giving in the sense of producing or causing to appear. So I will cause wonders, terata, to appear in the heaven, anno, above. And give could almost work there. I will give wonders in the heaven above, but cause, produce, kai semeia, and signs, epi tes geis kato, and signs upon the earth, kato is below. So again, the inclusiveness of this is stressed from heaven down to earth. This activity will include all regions. Now, what might these signs and wonders include? Here you have a list without any real syntactical connectors, but just in the form of a straight list. Haima, kai pir, kai atmida, kapnu. So haima, blood, and pir, fire, and atmida, kapnu. The atmida, I first glanced at that, I thought, that doesn't even look like a Greek word, but this is atmis, atmidos, a third declension noun, that means vapor, and then kapnu, a genitive, regular second declension, which means smoke. So a vapor of smoke, smoking vapor or steaming smoke, some kind of picture like that. And this is explained a little bit then in what follows. How would blood and fire and vapor be signs in heaven and on earth? Well, first of all, verse 20, Ha helios metastrophesetai eis skatos, kai he selene eis haima. So the sun, helios, metastrophesetai, this is the future passive of metastrepho, which in the active means to change or alter something, often into its opposite or some kind of surprising difference. And here the sun, now passive, will be turned or changed into darkness. So that perhaps takes in the vapor, a cloud, the darkness will cover the sun. Kai he selene eis haima. And the moon, selene, into, that is, assume the same verb here, will be changed into blood. And then prin el thein hemeron. Prin was originally an adverb of time, just meaning before, but then it came to be used really as a temporal conjunction. And here you see it's followed by an aorist infinitive and an accusative subject. So we can't really preserve the infinitive form of the verb, but we would just translate before hemeron, the day comes, el thein. So before the day comes, now which day? It's qualified here. Before the hemeron kyriou, before the great Epiphany, this revelatory day of the Lord. Verse 21, Kai estai pas hos an epikalesetai ta anima kyriou sothesetai. This vision may sound very terrifying, and yet Peter ends with the reassurance of from the prophet that, and it will be. Notice how this picks up the same opening as verse 17, and it will be pas hos an. Here we have all who, pas with the relative pronoun, and then on to make it really conditional. So not thinking of a person in particular, but anyone who does this. So, and it will be that whoever, epikalesetai, should call upon or invoke the name of the Lord, sothesetai. He will be saved. And that is where our passage ends. I'd like to make just a few comments, if you can stick with me for just a few more minutes. One thing that I found always helpful in Bible studies, and you can do it there with at a little more length than you can perhaps in a sermon, but growing up in the Midwest with Pentecost always coming in the spring, it was always a little bit lost on me what exactly this festival was celebrating. And I think it's extremely important from a biblical point of view to recall that this is really a harvest festival. So we think of Pentecost perhaps, at least I did growing up, as a time of new life and sort of rebirth. But from a biblical point of view, this is the first harvest that will indicate whether or not the final and then greater harvest holds promise or not. So if you have a good early harvest, then you celebrate, because that should mean then that the harvest still to come, the great harvest, will in fact be great. I think that's extremely enlightening in terms of where we are at in the book of Acts, that this is sort of the first promise of a great harvest to come, although it is in and of itself already a harvest. Again, if you want more historical background, the commentaries will help you out. Fitzmyer notes that in later times, or at least in some communities, the Pentecost festival was broken up into even several smaller components, one of which was the Pentecost of new wine, when you sort of had this first tasting then of the wine for that year. It was still young and still very sweet. But that connection, whether or not the chronology needs to match up exactly between his references or from the temple scroll, and whether that was commonly observed by all is a question. But at least it gives you the idea that this was a time when people were taking great joy and delight in the first signs of the abundant harvest that God was going to give them that time. Another thought, just sort of incidentally, that struck me, I always like to look for graphic images to go with passages, and I was caught by the number, especially of the sort of classical biblical illustrators, the, you know, medieval Bible illustrations and so on, how many of them, when they want to illustrate the opening scene, actually show the Spirit as a dove and sort of then sending down these little tongues of fire. What struck me was that that seems to create a confusion in our minds that the text doesn't have. The language, especially of verse 3, actually parallels fairly closely the description of the Holy Spirit at the baptism of Jesus when it appears Hose, like a dove. And here you have Hose, Pyros, like fire. So it's not that the Spirit sends down little bits of some kind of gift or power, but actually the Spirit now has come, instead of to rest on one anointed one, the Spirit has come down and divided and dwells fully and equally in all of those who were present. In terms of big pictures, once again, I think it's important here to think back to the pride of humanity, that where all people wanted to come together and build a tower that would reach up into heaven and so they could be where God was, and the division into languages and the confusion that followed was a result of that proud and rebellious attempt to elevate ourselves to the place of God. Now here, by God himself pouring out his Spirit, the barrier of language is removed, in at least sort of a foretaste, a glimpse of that new world that's possible when God can bring people together again, not in rebellion against himself, but drawn by the power of his Spirit to serve him. Perhaps most important in looking at this passage and what it means for us is not contemporary discussions of Pentecost and spiritual gifts and who has what or can do what, but to look at the way Peter himself interprets this speaking as the authoritative voice for the apostles and quoting scripture. And here Peter is clear that the first and immediate significance that he wants to share with people, the explanation that will clear up why all these strange things are happening, and that these men that they saw were not drunk, he appeals to the prophet Joel and says, these are signs of the last days, when God himself will pour out his spirit on all flesh. That's what you're witnessing here. He will continue in this sermon, of course, to connect that fulfillment and outpouring of the Spirit with then all that God has done in and through Jesus Christ, that this Jesus whom they killed, that is the people he's speaking to, but whom God raised up, because of this great fulfillment of God's plan, we are now in the last days, so to speak, in the countdown between the first initial harvest and the final harvest to come. So there is great richness in this passage's ability to help us understand our place, that is the church today, our place in God's plan, in our world, in time, sort of where are we in the story, and then how we are caught up into this great story and drawn into God's work of bringing in that great and final harvest. Just sort of by way of a passing or sort of concluding note here, a while back I came across a line from an ancient African sermon preached for Pentecost, where the preacher said, when was the last time your faith made you so joyful that someone accused you of having too much to drink? I always thought that was a great question to ponder. In the midst of a great celebration in Jerusalem, the apostles are now filled with a joy that even makes them stand out beyond the celebrants who are gathered there in Jerusalem from all over the world. And here is a joy that doesn't come just from gathering together for a holiday. I sort of connect that in my mind with the word flamboyant, which comes from old French words to flame or blaze. And, of course, flamboyant in one of its meanings is brilliant in color or resplendent. And I've always thought this is a day for the church to be a little flamboyant, to show the joy that we have in the Lord. We have just celebrated the great 50 days. This is, in fact, the great 50th day of our Easter celebration. And the world should see that there's something here that they don't possess, and they may even find it hard to understand. Well, there's much, much more that could be said about this passage in terms of its connection with, for instance, the oracles either against or for the nations, the idea of if this begins in Jerusalem, notice how already almost the whole world is involved in it, and yet this message and the messengers will still travel forth to reach those far corners of the world that the Lord spoke of in his parting address to them. We will stop here, though, because we don't want to make this recording excessively long, and I will close with prayer that God will bless you either in your meditation upon his word or in your preparation to proclaim it. And thank you.